This podcast is brought to you by Mobley & Sons. I actually stopped in Mobley & Sons just a few weeks ago, have some alterations done. They were great, really helpful, had a great time in there. Mobley & Sons has an unmatched selection of men's clothing combined with superior customer service. They've served as a fine men's clothier since 1969. Go check them out. They'll get you looking good for the big game. Welcome back to the Bama Beat. I'm Ben Jones. We're continuing our series looking back at the road to Saban, all of the Alabama football coaches in between Coach Paul Bear Bryant and Nick Saban. We've got the first two out of the way, Ray Perkins and Bill Curry, we've already discussed, as well as the end of the Saban era, which means today it's time for the Gene Stallings era. Talk about it. We've got Cecil Hurt here. Cecil, how are you doing?
Great. How are you today?
I'm good, as well as Taylor Watson, curator of the Bryant Museum, who's joining us again.
Hello, everybody, and thanks for having me back.
Yeah. We appreciate what you were able to do on the last couple podcasts. You asked a lot more intelligent questions than me about the Alabama football coaches who were here before I was born. So we're now into the era when I was born. I was alive when Gene Stallings was coach. However, I'm sure you still know a lot more about this era than I do. This is when you were a student, unless I'm wrong?
Actually, the 92 is the year I first started at the museum.
Okay.
So my first year as an official employee of the university, we won a national championship. It's all on me.
There you
go.
It's all me. Gene Stallings, fair to say, this is the high water mark for the Alabama football program in between the Bryant era and the Saban era. I don't think there's any disputing that for anyone, right?
No.
Okay. It is interesting as we look back at this. We've talked about Gene Stallings on both of the last two podcasts about Ray Perkins and Bill Curry because he was a candidate. He was considered for the job both of those times. What do we think made him finally the guy this time? Was this the first time he was offered the job, or was this just the first time he accepted the job?
I think it was the first time he was offered the job at the presidential level again. Everything that went into Ray getting the job, again, if Coach Bryant hadn't wanted Ray to have the job, Ray wouldn't have had the job. So, and then Bill's, the decision was basically made by Dr. Thomas, Dr. Joab Thomas. So I think after that, I think there had been so much divisiveness over Bill's hiring and over Bill Curry's tenure that there was a new athletic director. Hootie Ingram was now the athletic director. He replaced Steve Sloan. There was a new president, and I think that I guess they'd made that transition to Dr. Sayers, but nonetheless, I think that the idea was to go back to somebody with the closer ties to Coach Bryant, someone who could unify that part of the fan base. And Gene did that. You know, Gene was a Gene wasn't out and glad-handing and that kind of unifier, but he was, you know, kind of a fatherly figure at that point. Had impeccable credentials with Coach Bryant. Coach Bryant, you know, not to speak for him, obviously, but he loved Gene. As a player, Coach Bryant was always close to the Junction boys from A&M, always. And Gene went back that far and had been an assistant coach. And I don't know that you could say he was a successful coach at Texas A&M, although he got him to the Cotton Bowl. But there were a lot of circumstances at A&M, particularly during the war, that made it a tough job in some ways.
Referring to the Vietnam War.
Correct, yeah.
When you say the war, it depends on who you're talking to, which war you're talking about.
A&M still at that time had and still has a corps of cadets, but was essentially an all-male school with a large corps of cadets. And
Perhaps a difficult sell to get football players
because
to come to a military school.
Yeah, you were
going to
make a military obligation, likely as not. So that was one issue for Gene. The other, Gene could be a little stubborn sometimes. But, so I think that it was a much more low-key hiring process. I think Gene was the, not the only person that was mentioned, but I think that Gene had a lot of powerful support. And when Bill decided to go to Kentucky, Bill Curry was a popular choice.
And I think it was a quick choice. I think as soon as Curry resigned within a week, Coach Ingram had named Coach Stallings as the head coach. You know, not only did Coach Stallings play with Coach Bryant, part of that Junction Boy team, but also when Coach Bryant moved back to Alabama, he brought Coach Stallings with him as an assistant coach. And Coach was part of two national championships as an assistant coach here. And when he took the A&M job, he actually beat Coach Bryant in that Cotton Bowl that Cecil just mentioned.
Oh, I didn't know that, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a great picture of Coach Bryant lifting Coach Stallings up after the game.
Okay. Now, one thing that we've talked about on the other podcasts are other candidates. However, if this was done within a week of Bill Curry moving on, perhaps there weren't any other candidates. Perhaps this got done just that quick because there was no one else considered. Is that fair?
There were names that people tossed around, but Gene was the obvious, I think, choice.
It seems in some ways like, you know, this is a guy that some folks had been after since 1982, and this was finally when they got it done, you know, going into 1990 at the end of 1989.
To some extent, he always had support, I think, from the Bryant family and from people who had worked with him before as assistant coaches or administrators who were still involved in the administration. Time gets collapsed. You know, we think of all of it now as so far and so long ago, but the period of time between Coach Bryant's death and Gene's hiring was only 7 years.
Right.
Yeah. It looks different from the prism of 2019, but it really wasn't that long. It was 7 years.
Yeah. So I think we know what the high point was of this tenure. It was the 1992 National Championship, right?
Sure.
Okay. We can talk about how he got there, of course. 7-5 in 1990, 11-1 in 1991, then 13-0 the national championship in 1992. 1993, they were 9-3-1 on the field, which would end up being a 1-12 record after the NCAA ruling. 12-1 in 1994, 8-3 in 1995, and then 10-3 again in his final season in 1996. Would the low point be that 7-5 season and in his debut Bill Curry had won 10 games in his last 10
years? The 1990 team started out 0-3, and the people who had reservations about Gene because his record had been as a head coach was 27-45-1.
Right. Cecil just did that without looking at his phone.
His record at A&M plus his record with the Cardinals.
Yeah. He was 27-45-1 at A&M, 23-34-1 at the Cardinals.
Right,
so two 10 years of below 500.
Right, yeah. Correct. And so you know, some people who had liked Bill they had terrible injury luck for one thing in 1990. They didn't have great schedule luck when his first game was against Southern Miss with Brett Favre. Although Favre only threw for like 140 yards in that game, but he was still Brett Favre. You still sort of had to contend with him, and it was about 140 degrees at Legion Field, too. And then Saran Stacy got hurt. Craig Sanderson got hurt. Prince Wembley got hurt. So their main offensive weapons were injured. They were in an 0-3 skid. the old streak breaker of the Southeastern Conference came up next, the Vanderbilt Commodores. And so Gene got his first win against Vanderbilt. And sort of the ship got righted. You know, they figured out what they were going to do. Offensively, Gary Hollingsworth was the quarterback. Gary had really prospered under Homer Smith in Bill Curry's offense. Less so, he would probably say this, Gene would probably say this. Gene wanted a much more physical, much more run-oriented offense. Thought he had a 1,000-yard back in Saran, and then Saran got hurt, and so they had to make some adjustments. Kevin Turner at fullback was a good offensive player. But anyway, they were going to win with defense and special teams. And so really, certainly national championship is the high point, but the great win for a lot of people in Gene's tenure was the 1990 Tennessee game.
You know, and one of the big myths that follows the University of Alabama football is that he went into that Tennessee game. Tennessee was ranked number 3. That Alabama was winless going into that game. It's just not. We were 2-3.
They might have felt like it.
But that's one of the misses, that, and that's built up over time, is that, you know, he took this winless team in and beat Tennessee, a number 3 ranked Tennessee team, which, by the way, he also beat Auburn his first year, which hadn't been done in a while. And Alabama beating Tennessee and Auburn in the same year hadn't been done since 1981. And it had never been done by a first-year coach since J.W. Pollard. Yeah, J.W. Pollard did it in 1906.
So he was able to win some fans over pretty quickly by virtue of those.
You beat Tennessee, you make happy, particularly that Tennessee team, because they were number 3. People thought, you know, this is the year Johnny Majors probably started the end of Johnny Majors' career.
Yeah.
Probably certainly put him on the downslide. If anybody forgets, Alabama did a tremendous job defensively against a very good Tennessee offense, could not move the ball at all. It was tied 3-3 late in the game. Tennessee lined up for what would have been a game-winning field goal with a couple of minutes left. Stacy Harrison blocked the field goal. It rolled. You know, the bounces of the game, sometimes the field goal can go straight up.
Yep.
It rolled backwards about 20 yards, which was 20 yards Alabama was never going to gain.
That's true.
They did run, you know, 3 or 4 plays and then got Philip Doyle. People who make the Alabama place kicker jokes now, appropriately or inappropriately, Alabama had a great run of kickers with Van Tiffen and Philip Doyle and then Michael Proctor. But Philip Doyle was great kicker, super competitive guy. Lined up on the last play of the game, knocked it in, ran down the Tennessee sideline shooting the pistols. Would have fought every one of them if they'd have come out there.
So maybe that's the high water
so,
mark.
So, well, it was, you know, one thing about Alabama and Alabama's tradition is there have been many, many, many great games where Alabama was either expected to win or at least was a 50-50 proposition, like say the Georgia SEC championship games that Nick Saban has won against Georgia, all great games. But you weren't like, oh, Alabama has no ch-. You didn't go into the Georgia Dome saying, well, Alabama just doesn't have a chance. You know, Georgia's number 3 and here's Alabama at 2-3. So that's a rare feeling for Alabama fans to have been a 3-touchdown underdog, really 17-18 point underdog, and win the game, and then to win it in such dramatic fashion. So yeah, Gene definitely won lots of fans over. They went on and finished 7-5. That Penn State, beating Penn State, was good that year. They were really good. Alabama then beat Auburn, then got involved in the Fiesta Bowl with that had a Martin Luther King Day controversy and there was so forth, and played Louisville.
What do you mean by Martin Luther King Day controversy? I've not heard this.
Normally at 7-4, Alabama would not have been a Fiesta Bowl team.
Makes sense.
But there were teams, because Arizona had, as a state, had not adopted a Martin Luther King holiday, there were some schools who would not accept a bid to the Fiesta Bowl. Others welcomed one, Louisville being one of them. And so Alabama played Louisville in the Fiesta Bowl. Neither here nor there.
Howard Schnellenberg.
How they got there. Yeah, Howard. I drove up and did pregame stuff with Howard at Freedom Hall. His office is right across from Freedom Hall at the time. But Browning-Nagel was the quarterback. I'm not sure. You know, people get tired of the. Well, they weren't fired up for the bowl game, or they weren't ready. But you need to be ready to play if you go into a bowl game. But Alabama got down early, 3 touchdowns in the first quarter, and they were not a team that was built. As I said, they were not a team that was built to come back. So Louisville ended up beating them 34-7. The only touchdown Alabama got was an interception. They didn't get an offensive touchdown. Charlie Garner had an interception return. And so it was not a great end, but he'd beaten Tennessee and Auburn, so everybody was was happy, and then they had a fortuitously, in some ways, the class of recruits that was available to them. Bill had recruited okay. I mean, there were some good players on the roster, but fortunately for Gene, that 1990 cycle, guys that signed in February of 91, was a great class of in-state players, headed by David Palmer. But Sam Shea, Damian Jeffries, Shannon Brown, Everett Brown, you know, so many guys that they really were able to get the talent level up, including one, you know, superstar talent in Palmer, who was just what they needed for the next 3 years.
I still hear folks around Alabama when I talk to them, and people have the conversation of who's the greatest high school player you ever saw, and people say, I saw David Palmer in high school. That still comes up.
We have a come by the museum, and I will pull the Central High School Jackson Olin game, and I think at halftime David Palmer was selling popcorn because he did everything else. It's the most and Central was a good football team. It was the most amazing high school performance I've ever seen. Yep.
Central won the game, but it was like a 58-42 type game.
Yep.
And Jackson Olin literally had two guys. You know, they had David, and they had a quarterback whose name escapes me, except sometimes David would play quarterback and this guy would play wide receiver, and the coach did a great job of moving the guys around and so forth.
And he actually punted too.
Yeah, oh, he could do.
Did he ever punt and field a punt on the same play?
No, but if he had,
he's fast enough to do it.
If he had, well, he wasn't super fast. I mean, he wasn't lightning fast, but he had unbelievable. People talk about what constitutes an athlete. David had unbelievable hand-eye coordination, unbelievable awareness of where he was, a great sense of just how to run a football, make people miss. That was why he was a great punt returner. The first guy was not going to get David Palmer. He just wasn't going to bring him down.
We've kind of seeped into some of the best players of the era, but before we do that, I want to talk a little bit more about the 1992 National Championship game.
Mm-hmm.
In some ways, just for me looking at it from an outsider's perspective, that seems very important because it's 13 years after Alabama's last national championship, 17 years before its next national championship. I wonder if the program would have the same gravitas in 1997 when Nick Saban came around, if Alabama had gone that entire period without winning a national championship. From that perspective, how important was the Gene Stallings era and kind of returning Alabama to a point where it was nationally relevant for a sustained period of time?
Oh, it was very important. It was very important. It perpetuated the idea that you know, Alabama could win. It wasn't entirely Coach Bryant, you know, and they could do it with basically Southern players. You know, Miami was then what Alabama is today. I mean, as far as a dynasty, as far as the dominant.
It was the U part one.
The dominant program. And it was a strange – you'll never see a year like it because of the way college football has changed. But they did it on defense. I mean, they did it with defense. They were just a great defensive football team that didn't want the – offense to screw anything up, and wanted to get the ball to Palmer, and they could run the ball. Now they had running back Sherman Williams, Derek Classic, but yeah, it wasn't a situation where anybody outside of Tuscaloosa thought that Alabama would in the preseason would win the national championship, or in New Orleans would beat Miami.
Yeah,
so or very few people.
It's also important to remember, especially for the history of it and how we've. Think about it. It was also the university's centennial for football.
I didn't know that. Okay.
Yeah, so there was all this big buildup about the 100th year of Alabama football going into the 92 season. So that played a part of it too.
And again, although the national championship game was a watershed moment, it wasn't a great game because Alabama dominated. The important game and the exciting game and the memorable game of that year was the first SEC championship game against Florida. Antonio Langham's interception and that first game at Legion Field, one of the two that was played at Legion Field. And So just, you know, a really important year in college football history. You know, that SEC championship game really was the first step, was the first conference championship game of its type.
Right.
It was successful. Other conferences emulated that.
And you don't have the BCS at this point, but you are starting to move along from the polls to where they're trying to pair up the number one.
Yeah, it could have not been. You know, Alabama could have lost the championship game and still been playing Miami in the Sugar Bowl, right, possibly. But probably would have been Miami in Florida, and Alabama would have been playing somewhere else, and Florida would not have been number two in that case. So a little bit of good luck that it worked out.
And I think Coach Stallings was not in favor of the SEC championship game, because he always said the only you lose it, you're out. Yeah, he says why do that?
So. Well, what he would say was that season was we're 11-0 and we hadn't won nothing yet. So
yeah, it's a good point. Best players before we move on, we can talk about the 1993 season and Antonio Langham. The best players of the Stallings era were
David Palmer, Sean Alexander, Chris Samuels, Ed, who was young. You know, went on to be a great player too under Mike Dubose, but Gene recruited him.
Jay Barker became the SEC player of the year.
Sean was certainly the greatest practice player of all time, since he didn't get into the into the game against LSU in '96 until he had really played almost very little, just mop up, and then set the school rush. The first time he really was the featured back, he rushed for 271 yards against LSU in Baton Rouge, which was at the same point in the schedule that it is now. It's about the ninth game of the year.
I don't think he played the next game, did he?
Yeah, they asked Gene why, and he said, well, he needs to block better. Everybody's like, no, Gene, he does not need to block better.
Became the program's all-time leading rusher despite his inability to block.
And then just an absolute list of great defensive players. Antonio Langham, George Teague, Lemanski Hall, Antonio London, John Copeland, Eric Curry, all those. You know, and I'm leaving out, you know, more outstanding defensive players than I've just listed. Just a great run of defensive players.
Taylor's got a few here written down as well. Yeah.
Later on, it was Dwayne Rudd, who was a first-round pick with the Vikings, Kevin Jackson. Although he was a great football player, we probably should talk a little bit about Kareem McNeil. And yeah, he was in a car wreck. And I think his story tells as much about Coach Stallings as what he did on the field, was how he kind of made sure that Kareem got the help he needed, was there for him. And that, to me, that's one of the high points of Coach Stallings. It's not what he did on the field. And I should say this out front. His son worked with the museum for 6 years. John Mark worked with us. So I have a great fondness for that. But, you know, the Stallings Center, he got the money raised for that. So what he did off the field might be just as important as what he did on the field.
Would 1993 or the outcome of the 1993 season have been the low point in this tenure? The NCAA stuff with Antonio Langham?
Well, the NCAA stuff was, yeah. That's a separate issue. And, you know, whether Gene would have changed the way he handled that, probably not. Gene's pretty stubborn.
You told me the story. I don't know if you want to share it with everyone out there, but if you want to, then you can share everyone out there. Sorry, folks. You asked Gene, or when the stuff with Antonio Langham broke, you asked him if he knew anything about it, right? Or did he call you, or did you call him? How did that work?
When the stuff with Antonio Langham broke, I was out of the country. I was off that year.
Okay. Maybe it was Tommy Dees who told me that story. It
may have been Tommy, but it wasn't me. I was on sabbatical.
But it was connected. NCAA was on campus with Gene Jelks, and how did that work? Did they find out the Langham stuff? Maybe I'm wrong. I could be missing.
Antonio's situation was with an agent, and he had signed a napkin for $400. And times are different. You know, first of all,
Nowadays, they'd probably make you pay the $400 you'd back pay the and 400, sit a game out. Yeah.
You'd pay the $400, and you'd sit out a game. Gene Jelks. Gene had played for Bill in the late 80s, and I'm not going to get on here and disparage Gene. I'm sure he had financial issues, who was supporting him while he told that story. You know, he said that a coach named Jerry Pullen had helped him buy a car, you know, some right. piddly amount. But again, people freaked out about things like that at that time. And it, you know, he was ultimately found not to be credible, other than a loan that he had gotten to cover his player insurance. Was found that he shouldn't have gotten the loan. Nobody ever proved that Gene got a car or anything like that, although he had various stories about what he did and what he didn't do. So but yeah, it was just a mess. Alabama got crossways with some individuals at the NCAA. It wasn't handled particularly well, probably on either side, but it ended up being a pretty onerous probation in terms of scholarship limits. Gene was able to sort of weather that. They had great teams in 94 and 96. Just weren't as good as Florida. Lost to Florida in the championship game
about 1 point
those years. So it's a situation where Gene handled that pretty well, but there was a residual effect. Of course, it cost them the postseason in 19. There were games vacated in 1993, of which nobody really cares.
If you include the vacated wins, Stallings' record at Alabama finishes up being 62-25. If you don't count vacated wins, he was 70-16-1 overall.
Yeah, they won those games. Like I say, I didn't see much of the 93 season, but technically the only game they won that year was against North Carolina in the bowl game.
Okay.
Langham didn't play.
Yeah.
One of the great what-ifs is, what if David Palmer leaves after his junior year? If he'd have stayed in 94, there was a chance that this team could have won a national championship in 94. I think he helps them beat Florida, mm-hmm. I think. But him leaving as a junior. This is a little off subject. Who was the first junior to leave?
Herschel went to the USFL.
Oh, okay.
It
was
not
10 years prior to that.
Right. And it wasn't the NFL wasn't drafting them until later, but Herschel was the first one.
Was Keith McCants the first Alabama?
Probably the first really prominent one.
Okay. One of the things I think is most interesting about the Stallings era and this whole situation in 93 in particular is that Antonio Langham still seems to be pretty well received by Alabama fans. I don't think Alabama fans dislike Antonio Langham after what had happened.
Antonio's a good guy. He's out after the Sugar Bowl. Some guy corners him, there's probably, like I say, $400 bills involved, and he signs a napkin,
Was it actually on a napkin, or
yeah,
you just use that as an expression?
No, it was a napkin.
Wow. so a napkin and, wipes away the 1993 season.
So I think could should he have done it? Of course not. But does anybody who think that it was nefarious or he was a bad person? Not really.
Yeah.
I have no problems at all with Antonio. He was just elected to the Alabama Sports Hall of Fame for this class. So shows that he's well respected and nobody, sometimes people blame the players on something like that. I don't know anybody that blames Antonio Langham for that situation. It's just he shouldn't have done it. He should have paid back $400 or he paid it to charity or whatever and sat out the first game of 1993. And now they can argue, if Alabama had reported, who knows? Who knows?
The legacy of the Gene Stallings era. Taylor's already mentioned some of what he did off the field. The Stallings Center on campus. I think Alabama fans continued to kind of have a relationship with John Mark Stallings even after Gene Stallings was no longer the coach. Mal Moore coming on as offensive coordinator, because Mal Moore had been with Stallings in the NFL. He was a Gene Stallings hire, right? And then Dabo Swinney would have been another one. This is when the Dabo era begins. You have the origin story of Dabo.
If it were not for Biebs, Coach Stallings, there would be no Dabo, because Dabo was just a walk-on wide receiver. Dabo has told his story many times at great length, and everybody knows it, but Dabo was basically the same guy as a walk-on that he is today. But Gene liked him. He worked super hard. You know, never let anybody tell you, for all the, you know, silliness sometimes that you see in Dabo, that he's not a hard worker, because he is.
Yeah.
So Coach Stallings made him a graduate assistant, liked what he did as a graduate assistant, made him an assistant coach. And
the rest is history.
The rest is history, even though Dabo was out of it for a little while. You know, he was in construction development for a little while. But when he came back, had the resume to be hired by Tommy Bowden at Clemson,
right,
because of their connection at Alabama and because Gene Stallings had made him a coach. So that's just one way that Gene continues to affect college football.
And Jeremy Pruitt was a walk-on. He transferred from Middle Tennessee, who came here and played, and Freddie Kitchens.
Oh.
Who
Gene was, Stallings' coaching tree is pretty impressive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And there are a ton of, too many to mention, of his former players who are coaching either assistant coaches in college or high school. There are a couple of managers who are really good high school football coaches who worked, and they will give Coach Stallings the credit for teaching them how to do that.
Hmm. So, how did the Stallings era end? What made him decide to move on from this after two pretty successful seasons in 94 and 96?
There'd been another change in the administration. Gene really wanted Mal to be the athletic director. Andrew Sorensen had become president and went outside and hired Bob Bockrath, and he and Gene, and I think Bob gets a bad rap sometimes, you know, because he didn't necessarily get along with Gene, then a lot of other people didn't like him, and he wasn't, you know, connected to Alabama in any way. Really the only athletic director until Greg Byrne, who didn't have some connection to Alabama football, was Bob. So rather than continue to fight that after 1996 and go into the probation period, Gene just decided he was going to go back to the ranch. I mean, that's exactly what he did. Had he still had Dr. Sayers as president, which, you know, the NCAA situation caused a change, you know, both in some ways at the presidential level and absolutely at the athletic directorship, cost Hootie the athletic directorship. So Gene suddenly wasn't working for the people who hired him and wasn't real comfortable with that situation. And, you know, Gene has... he loves his ranch in Paris. He loves his church. Loves to do missionary work and so forth. And decided that 70 wins in 7 years was enough. And so that was his decision.
You know, another great myth, or maybe it's not a myth, but is that he and Bockrath got into an argument after the Mississippi State game. But he had decided really before that, don't you think, that Coach Stallings had decided he was going to retire before that?
First of all, wasn't exactly an argument, just a, you know, one-sided argument, if that. It would be like if I said, get the hell out of here, Ben. That's not an argument, you know.
Thanks, Cecil.
I'm just saying.
Yeah.
I'm just saying that was really about the extent of what was said.
Yeah.
Gene wouldn't, you know, make it. that impulsive a decision. That was a symptom, not a cause. You know, he didn't get along great with Bob, but it wasn't because one thing happened in Starkville, Mississippi, that Gene decided to change life course. And
yeah,
you know, he had thought about it.
We can probably do this segment pretty quickly. We grade all of these hires. Is this an A? Is this the A in between Bryant and Saban?
Well, if you're going to call Bryant and Saban the A's, then Gene would be a B+. More for off the field, probably, than anything. And also because his offense drove a lot of people crazy. But I will say this real quickly, and I know we're trying to wrap this up. Gene is Coach Stallings, who was very good to me, continues to be, somebody I talk to now and again, was a, as history unfolds and you see periods, Gene was a probably the perfect person to be the transition figure between Coach Bryant, to whom he had connections, with whom he was identified, and yet he gave a generation of fans, because there was always already starting to be college students, young fans, who didn't really remember Coach Bryant, didn't remember 1979, which was the previous national championship. 1992 was 13 years later. So that's a whole new generation of fans who their memories are Gene Stallings, you know, much more so than Coach Bryant. And beating Miami and beating Tennessee and beating Auburn. And Gene was the right person for that, too, because in addition to having that football success, he was such a – I mean, he's a Texan, and he's an Aggie, and that's where he graduated. But he's really identified as an Alabama guy, you know. And so people who – love Coach Stallings, it's not just about how many games he won. You know, it's the situation with John Mark. It's the work he did in the community. It's just the personality that he had, the old gruff football coach that you don't find anymore. You know, Gene's personality was suited for his times. I don't know if he'd be suited to coach in 2019. But so he is... I think Gene's importance, even though he won a national championship, I think Gene's importance is really as much who he was as what he accomplished.
Taylor, your grade?
It's a solid B. I mean, I would give him a solid B for just the way he handled David Palmer incident when David got in a little trouble. And you could genuinely tell that Coach Stallings was worried about him as a person, not as a – and David is a great player and you need him, but – I honestly believe that he understood that David needed the team more than we needed him. The team needed him. And he's a solid B. He's a solid. Now, I've been yelled at. Coach Stallings has yelled at me, too. We have a club that meets regularly, but wonderful human being.
This is a tough crowd. You win a national championship, you win 70 games in 7 years, and you get a B at Alabama.
You know, again, that was in – context of your question, which is if Coach Bryant and Coach Saban are the A's.
Well,
I mean, how else do you...
In the context of college football as a whole, Stallings is an A hire.
Yeah.
In the context of Ray Perkins and Mike Shula, Gene Stallings is an A, right?
It would be like being in a philosophy seminar with the valedictorian and the salutatorian, you know.
Yeah.
And
your philosophy class happens to have Plato and Socrates
and,
both.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you're the third best student.
Absolutely. And you're the third best philosopher. But my paper's great. Sorry. You get a B.
Lessons learned from the Stallings era. You know, a couple of them that we've kind of collected between talking about Ray Perkins and Bill Curry. You learned that the coach needed to kind of be big enough for the job. Yep. You learned that having some kind of connection to Coach Bryant was helpful, although perhaps not necessary. I think also the way that the Stallings teams were constructed, particularly on defense, is probably what also endeared them to some of the Alabama fans.
The ones who loved that style of football, you know, and some people wanted to throw it around more. And you know, Homer came back in 94 and Jay did throw it around. Jay set all kind of records, but which people don't remember as much. But yeah, that was part of it in terms of hard-nosed, tough, a lot of Alabama kids. You know, I guess Dabo, yep. Dabo would be the model of that, you know, the walk. Not that Dabo right. ever made any tremendous contribution on the field.
And also, as both you and Taylor mentioned, the importance of the off-field piece of this job as well, which you see continuing on today with Nick Saban, and which perhaps Bill Curry and Ray Perkins did not have.
Not in the same way, just different personalities, just different. Like Taylor said, you know, Gene could be very stubborn, but he was never cruel or sarcastic, and he never held a grudge. He could be mad at you, he could yell at you, but he'd be glad to see you the next day. Also, he's the only Alabama coach who ever brought a raccoon to the office.
Okay, I think that's a good place for us to wrap this up. Taylor, would you like to tell folks about the museum?
Museum is open 9 to 4 daily. It's $2 to get in. With A-Day coming up or spring practice, we've got a new exhibit that everybody should come check out. It's Bryant Museum right off of University Boulevard across the street from Coleman Coliseum.
All right. That's going to do it for us. Thanks for listening, everybody. Hey, guys. This is Ben Jones. I hope you enjoyed that episode. If you did, please give us a rating or a review on iTunes. We really appreciate all your guys' support. I know every podcast you guys listen to, they probably ask you all to leave a rating or a review or both. They do that because that helps other people find the podcast. The more subscribers that we have, the more ratings that we have, the more reviews that we have, the more people will listen to the podcast, the higher up it ranks us in the algorithms. So if you're listening to this and you have a couple extra minutes, we'd really appreciate it if you could just go ahead and do that. Thanks.